Welcome back to Seat Time. This podcast episode is a new attempt at the way I'm trying to do things for maybe a little while. We'll see how this goes. I definitely want your feedback. So for this podcast episode, Charles Kaslow is our guest. He's my guest. And he used to work for 100% for a very long time and worked on a lot of the goggles that they've created over the past couple years. He is now at Stasic, but he took some time for me to have a podcast interview with him. I then used that interview to help with my research I was doing on a goggle video. So if this conversation interests you, make sure you head over to the Seat Time YouTube channel and check out the video that I did put together with the information that I gathered from Charles and from other research that I had done. I do not know what 2024 is going to look like when it comes to podcasts for Seat Time. My main goal is to race all of the Blackjack series that is happening there in Texas, in Arkansas, in Oklahoma, and Missouri. So we're going to see how that goes. I'm obviously going to make some videos while we're doing that, but podcasting may be the thing that takes a backseat. We'll see. I might do more videos like this. If you guys have a good response, I might do more interviews that work into videos and research and things of that nature. So definitely pass on your thoughts. Of course, if you want to support Seat Time, please head to shop.seattime.co. Make sure you check out the Utility Can Caddy. It is our first ground-up product, and it is a way to make sure that you're organized AF as you're headed to the trailhead every single time you go ride, because it's going to take your fuel can, and it is going to make it the most organized part of your day. So thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoy this. Definitely pass along your thoughts. Have a great one. Here's the interview. So here's the thing. Over the past couple of years, I've kind of been having a lot more issues when it comes to fitment with my goggles, right? I've changed helmets here and there, and I've been changing goggles all over the place with all of the high-end goggles, and I keep seeming to have more and more issues. And then I realized, wait a minute, all of these goggles are the same. They now all have these outriggers on them, right? And I was like, holy shit. So I was like, wait a minute, let me try something different. So I went and bought the super cheap goggles of a lot of these brands, and they fit me way better on multiple different helmets. And so that kind of got me started. Like, I want to figure this out. Is there more than meets the eye to this kind of thing of like, we're going to have a super expensive goggle. Everyone thinks that this is the best, so everyone's going to buy it, but maybe this other thing works a little bit better. And so, like, I know you don't work at 100% anymore, but you're one of my favorite Paul Pomek guests. So I've got to say, like, it'll be fun to talk to you regardless, right? And you've just got so much knowledge from 100%. So, like, you know, being the goggle guy, like, what the hell is an outrigger and what is it supposed to do?
Well, I guess, yeah, first and foremost, it's where the strap attaches to the frame, and the concept was way before my time at 100%, right? But the concept would be that the strap, instead of being attached to the frame, attaches to the outrigger further out so that the frame can sit within the helmet and sit on the sides of your face, and then have the strap offset sort of to allow clearance around the helmet padding and shell. So if, in theory, if the strap is attached to the goggle, like it has was forever and ever, and like you're saying you actually prefer, it wants to pull the frame sort of apart and sort of flatten it out to clear the outside of the helmet shell, whereas the outrigger offsets it to allow for the goggle to be up against your face and then the strap to be outside of the shell. So So on paper and in theory, it makes total sense. And the where the goggles can seat against your face, they're still whatever that measurement is, an inch and a half or something of helmet on each side. By the time you have padding and EPS and shell. So the outrigger is essentially just allowing for that clearance to get the strap around the helmet.
Yeah, it was like one of the first things that I realized is that probably about a year and a half ago when I first started playing with this, I was like, I felt myself in a race or riding just always wanting to grab my helmet and bring it up. And I was like, why am I always doing this? And then I finally made the connection that I was like, it's because something is putting weird pressure on my nose. And that's when I was like, wait, what's on my nose? Oh, it's my goggle. It's my goggle. Okay. Yeah. So then I'm like, oh, my goggle's not sitting deep enough onto my face, right? Kind of a thing. And so then I would start grab the goggle and kind of like shove it, kind of like try to tuck it into the hole of the helmet. And it's like, It's just so, it seems like it's got to be so hard from a product development standpoint to make this work for so many helmets. And that's where I think the problem comes in this, right? Is every face is different. Sure, every helmet is different per manufacturer, but then at the same time, you're going to have that same concept with every goggle from every goggle manufacturer is going to be different. They're going to treat outriggers different. So with everything you've learned and the way that you've seen these products develop, like how do you approach the right way that riders should kind of try to find the best goggle for them?
I mean, my answer is probably a bit boring and not super interesting for the people that want an answer, right, to the question. And to me, it comes down completely and totally to your head and your helmet with your goggles. So the only way for personally, I would ever recommend anybody would be to get, I think you base the fitment around the helmet, right? That's the most important piece of protection. So the helmet that fits you the best, and then go just try goggles, whether that's in the dealership or your buddy's goggles or whatever, until you find that connection that feels good to you. Because you said there's all the different helmets, right? And they fit all different ways. And then there's all these different goggles that fit all different ways in people's heads. And so that's not even just a three-part variable. They all compound on each other, right? So your head might fit different inside of a showy shell so that your face is different within the eye port, right? So then your nose is at a different height based on how your head fits within that shell. So it's not even a catch-all in the sense that the 100% Armega goggles fit well and Bell Moto 10s, because that Bell Moto 10 might sit funky on my head, so that makes that goggle feel even worse on my face. So it really completely, in my opinion, comes completely down to you find the helmet that fits you, you try different goggles to see what fits your face and that helmet, the way that your head fits within that helmet, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so the hard part with that, to me anyway, for what I think of consumers, is that is the dollar attributing to value, right? So sure. Like someone sees a $150 pair of goggles, like they're like, that's the best pair of goggles. I need right. to wear yeah. the best pair of goggles. That pair is $45. So they don't, I could see it in myself. That's what I did until I started playing with this, is I attributed that to, that's the best. I want the best. I need to get that. And no one at any company like 100% or that sells $150 or a $45 thing is going to be like, no, it's cool, buy the $45 one. They want the markup right. on, right? So sure. How could goggle manufacturers do better in telling the story that you're telling without, you know, screwing yeah. up their chance to have a lot more markup? But I think it's customer service, but it's like, I figure you've got a better answer.
Totally. And one thing I didn't touch on before on how companies develop goggles based on all those variables, right? And truthfully, you can't catch all and solve it, right? At 100%, what I was directly involved with, when we did the Armega goggle, we literally just bought every helmet we could buy and just had every person within the office try on different helmets or different goggles and different foam thicknesses and strap lengths and strap tension and strap height. And that's essentially how we got after it. But again, there's still all those different variables that you can't cover, but that's the way we handled it. But on the topic here, you know, it was a constant battle at 100%. And to give Ludo, the one of the co-founders and CEO of 100% credit, was he was always like, we're going to make the Armega. We want to have the best goggle on the market. But we're never going to discount or like make that, try to say that's better than our entry-level goggle or mid-level goggle or high-level or, you know, high-end goggle prior to the Armega coming out. And it was a battle constantly with athletes, because the scenario you said of most consumers where they go, that's $100, it must be better than the one that's $45, is exactly how every athlete thinks. They go, You come out with a new goggle, for instance, in their scenario, the Armega, instantly they all said, I want the Armega, before they even, some of them even tried it. And you go, wait a minute, you've been using the Acuri or the Racecraft or whatever they were using for 4, 5, 7, 8 years at that point, with zero problems and multiple championships and race wins and all these things. And then you're just saying right away, because you have something more expensive, I want that. And you're like, well, hang on, let's try it. And then there, and the credit to him, that was because he wanted to have athletes still wearing the Akuri goggle, which is the mid-level, cool. and the Racecraft, which is the high-end goggle, not just everybody in our mega. He was very conscious about, we want to have, you know, the premier high-end athletes that prefer the Omega based on fit and function use that, but we don't want to just completely alienate and give up on the other stuff. So now, easier said than done, because they all have egos and they all want the most expensive thing because they think that's just the coolest, most expensive thing.
Right.
So that was actually, as bad as it sounds, it was actually quite the battle for a long time there. Not convincing, I guess, convincing guys to open-mindedly try the other stuff that they've been using for years when there was something more expensive on the market. So, and really that it comes down to the scenario where the consumer thinks the most expensive thing is the best thing. If the high level athletes that the brand's marketing with, feel the same way and act the same way, then this feeds into and fuels that consumer's thought, right? So if every athlete 100% has, all of a sudden wears the Omega goggle, they're all going, oh, that must be the best goggle, that the mid-level press one can't work or something. But in reality, it comes down to how it fits and how it functions on that particular rider and helmet and face. So.
Right. I got two ideas on how we could, air quotes, solve for this, right? As someone that likes to solve problems. So the first one would be the way that we treat the website or whatever the marketing material would be for someone to come and get education, it would come across, there would be some kind of page that talks about fitment, and it literally could show different faces, right? And it talks about kind of like you see a little bit with knee braces, but where I think I see it the most is in barefoot shoes or like wide toe box shoes, because of like there they compare to like, if you have a wide foot, you're going to want to go up a size, or you're going to want to do these kinds of things. Or if you have a deep face, or again, to your point, if you wear a showy and you have this kind of face, you could, you know, try these goggles, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's a little bit less, this marketing page, this landing page is much more specific to how the goggles should fit you because of the equipment you wear and the face that you have versus a price. And then it just, again, it doesn't list price anywhere. It's just like, this is the goggle, and bloop, that way they can go then grab that goggle. And that might be a way to negate, now granted, I know you're not at 100% anymore, but that might be a way to negate the fact of like us just picking the most expensive goggle. The other thing is, now that there's so many online retailers that are selling glasses, you can spend $5 to $10 and you can get a kit and they send you a bunch of try on glasses. Why couldn't we do that with goggles? Right? Like now you spend $10. You spend $10, you get a little box that's got all of y'all's goggles in it. You get to keep it for a week and you put everything back in, right? You know what I mean? You send everything back. You guys figure out what the cleaning looks like, you know, or the goggle manufacturer figures that out. But then that way, and then it's like, as long as you get the goggles back and they're in good shape, then it's like $10 off whatever goggle you want to order. So if it's the $45 one and shipping, you just got free shipping. But if it's the, you know, the higher end one, it's whatever. You know what I mean? Like I was like, as you're talking, I was like, this is ways that using things outside the industry that we could help our riders make more personalized decisions, right? Opposed to like financial decisions or, well, Eli Tomac wears that, that's what I want. I mean, I'm almost as fast, so obviously it makes sense, right?
Right, totally. And that's a super interesting idea. And I think there's something there where if you have some sort of kit that people can buy or rent, however you want to word it, where they get one of each style that they can try on at their house and make an educated decision without doing sort of the Amazon theory where people right now, I think their thought now is Amazon has everybody so trained that everything will be there tomorrow or tonight and they can return anything, no questions asked, that people will just buy a few or a couple, knowing they have no intention of keeping two or three. They're going to keep one of them, get them, try them on sort of in the way you're saying, and then they just return the other ones, which is troublesome for the company because you have all these returns coming in and sometimes they don't package it back right, so you got to fix that. And so that would be your concept and idea would be sort of a way to alleviate some of that extra, the stuff that's happening to some extent already, just in a very inefficient way, because you don't know it's coming back and you don't know they repacked it right. Whereas if there was some sort of planned out kit that didn't have packaging that had to be all put back in specifically so the next customer feels like they got the same experience opening it up. Yeah, there could be something there. It's good. I didn't know that was a thing with sunglasses, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's like, just because, like, for myself, right? At 44, bro, I went to the doctor, I went into the shop, we tried whatever they had on, and that's what we purchased. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But now that I've got kids and we're doing all this stuff, like, yeah, like, the shit in the store is 8 times more expensive than what we can find online, especially since sometimes our 9-year-old loses goggles every 3 months, or glasses, goggles, but yeah. Still. So yeah. That is interesting. Okay, one more idea before I start asking you a couple more questions that we wrap this thing up is... Yeah. If we were to get people to be, again, a little bit more understanding that their face is not somebody else's faces, and start to understand that maybe their face, because of the way it is a little bit more sunken in their helmet, or when they wear helmet X, it's more sunken in. Could it ever be effective for goggles to have, like, I could order the Armega, but I want to get it with, like, different thicknesses of foam. So there's three different types of foam, a thin, a medium, and a thick. And then that way it's kind of like people can start to order, again, a little bit more of a personalized goggle.
To answer your question, there is different thicknesses. They can do sort of whatever they want. The challenge is the way 99% of motorcycle goggles are produced now, the foam is permanently adhered to the frame,
right?
So you can't really change it. You'd have to come up with some sort of functionality that allows a consumer to be able to remove the foam and put different ones on, which some brands have tried, not for the scenario of customizing necessarily, but for switching it out for sweat and things like that.
Nastiness.
But I think they all came across the same thing, is that that's one of the most critical parts of sealing against your face for dust and dirt. So if you start letting people move and change and mess with it, that opens it up to, like, oh, now there's dirt getting in, this goggle sucks, and you're like, no, well, you just put it back together wrong.
Well, I could even see it being on the purchase level, right? Like, there's, like, custom shirts out there that you could buy because totally. You've got a different chest cavity, right? But in reality, all they do is make a bunch of different patterns. You ordered a custom shirt, they make it for you out of the 8 different pieces that you selected. So you have a custom shirt-ish, but they're not making a custom shirt every time. And I could see maybe something like that, where it's like, you guys have these different thicknesses, which I'm sure you do for your athletes. Somebody, when they order it online, picks the thick, and then that goggle gets glued together, or maybe they're inventoried in that way, and then bloop, that way they get something that's more to them. I don't know why I'm problem solving this for you. You don't work there anymore. No, but again, I'm just like, it's just interesting.
Right. And that could work, right? That just the assembly of that last step would have to be done
post-purchase
here at the warehouse or somewhere in the US, and there's multiple warehouses for some of these companies. And then you run into the issue of how do they do that at the dealer level or an online retailer level, right? Because then the dealer's going, I'm not going to buy for the black Armega with clear lens 4 different foam thicknesses and 3 different foam thickness SKUs to stock, and then the same thing for the red and the blue and the Curry and the Strada and Racecraft stuff. It becomes very SKU intensive, which most dealers don't like. Right?
They don't want more of that.
Less inventory as possible. And truthfully, that's one of the reasons behind a lot of 100%, some of 100% success is the simplicity of it, right? Where they had the same lens fits every goggle frame. So that made it simple for the dealer, made it simple for the consumer, simple for the distributors that stock the stuff to sell it. So having fewer SKUs is always looked at as better if all the SKUs sell a lot of volume. So splitting each goggle into multiple face foams and fitments was incredible for the consumer experience, pretty challenging for the commercial side of it and selling it in dealerships and stuff. So
did the Outrigger idea and concept in this injected molded, maybe the wrong words, lenses that are now shaped, right? Like quick release and everything. Like, did that start with the Oakley Airbrake? That was like
the The outriggers, no. The outriggers have been around for quite a while.
Okay.
I don't know for sure who did it first. I think it might have been Oakley, like Crowbar back in the day, or O-frame or whatever the hell they called it. but the injection molded lens, the first one I ever saw in the moto space was Oakley. I think they've been doing it, multiple brands have been doing it in snow ski stuff for quite a while.
Yeah, makes sense.
But yeah, Airbrake was the first one I ever saw. And when, you know, the price came out, it was like, good luck selling those. People are used to $200 goggles, right? Yeah. People are used to $20, $30 goggles at that point. And they kind of, you know, $180, $200 or whatever it was. So, but after a little while in the market, people really started to see there's something there. There's some better technology and even safety to some extent with the lens, because it's that really thick injection molded polycarbonate lens that doesn't flex a bunch like the flat, thin Lexan lens that most of the goggles have now. You push on it, it's flexible, right? It has to be flexible to get or into the frame, where the injection molded lens is much, much, much thicker. So it holds its shape and you can't push it in, right? It's super, super hard. But the reason you can't make the normal Lexan lens as flexible, put into the frame that thick, is because the thicker you get, the more distortion you get, the less optically correct it is, just from the sense that it's made flat, it's a sheet. And then, so it's most optically correct, clear state is when it's flat. If you bend it to put it into the frame, which you have to, things start to get distorted. So, and the thicker you go, the more enhanced or the worse that distorting is. So the way it is now, there that thickness that they most goggle companies use is sort of the fine balance of it's, you know, you're going to bend it to put it in a frame, and that's where you can't, your human eye really can't tell much of the distortion. But if you go thicker with it to make it more safe, you're going to start get to the point where you can't even really tell, like you're going to be able to tell rather that things are different and you can't see quite as sharp and as clear. So the injection molded one, you can go way, way thicker, and because it's molded in its natural state of that curve, that's when it's most optically correct, is when it's in the natural state. So you don't lose any vision or any clarity when you put it in your frame, right? So you can make it thicker and still see through it. It's better than.
Does the potential of the injected molded frame, being that it's shaped to a shape and it can give a little, but not nearly as much as the original, you know, what we're Lexan, what we're used to, like, can that potentially keep a goggle from like actually being able to mold better to our face?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. I most, just like as you're saying that, I'm like,
It's like most people don't sort of pick up on that. Or experience it, really, to be honest with you, because the foam sort of articulates because it's so thick and it's so squishy, for lack of better terminology. It sort of finds its way to seal around your face and fit well. But if you're actually pulling on it and getting it seated against your face, a really inexpensive goggle that's very flexible frame without outriggers and without any hard plastic components, it's absolutely going to form better around your face than one that's hard and doesn't have that sort of articulation around your face. You're relying solely at that point on the foam to sit in around your face and touch everywhere and make it feel comfortable.
Interesting.
Another variable on the injection molded lenses, with all the quick release, easy to put in, easy to take out thing. That's a challenge with goggles, right? Putting lenses in and out. That's been a age-long thing that goggle companies are trying to solve. So the quick release stuff, totally get it. That was a focus of ours when I was there to make that. When you do it, though, you have latches and clips and things. There has to be some really firm plastic for that stuff to latch on. You can't have a lever that's going to carabiner over and latching a lens on super pliable polyurethane or whatever it is material. So that even compounds what you were talking about, where that stiff frame becomes even more stiffer in certain areas, so that you can have the latching mechanisms and have a positive seat against a hard plastic. I know personally on the Omega goggle, we spent a ton of time with, there was two different, maybe even more than two, but different materials or different durometers of materials, where there was really hard plastic where the latches could latch, and then up along the top and some different places. There was, it was dual molded, where it was two different materials that were different densities and different pliability, I guess you would say. So we spent a ton of time on that, actually, to make it where you have the hardness and the spots that you needed it for the frame, for the lens to seat up against, and for the latches to connect, but then also make it where it still forms to your face in different spots. So that's one of the cool parts about 100% is the way that the two materials on the Omega goggle come together, and has two different flexibilities with materials and all in one molded goggle.
Yeah, and I've tried to dig in, but it's interesting because you say that kind of stuff, talking about the two different plastics and the way that you've tried to manipulate that for the reasons you did. Like, I don't remember seeing that anywhere. And I wonder if, like, technical stuff like that, like, some people might be like, dude, I want to know that. Like, and I don't know how you would, you know, educate them differently. And I know we're coming up against our time that we had set. So the last question that I really want to ask is, like, what any other thoughts about goggles, outriggers, non-outriggers, the way that you chose what you chose back in the day when you were a racer and still riding today? Like, what else about goggles?
Again, for me, it just came down to finding what fit for me, and it sort of changed a few times that I changed helmet brands, right? So even working at 100%, I sort of bounced. There was a time when I wore a Bell Moto 9 helmet, and I really preferred the Akuri goggle over the Racecraft. But then at some point I switched to a Shoei, and right around that time we came out with the Omega, and I liked the Racecraft for a bit before the Omega came out. And then once I got, once the Omega came out, I preferred the Omega and the Shoei helmet. It'd be interesting if I could have gone back at the time and put on the Bell Moto 9 and see if I still preferred the Akuri at the time over the Omega once it was out, but I'd already moved on. I do know that, I mean, we at that time, we got our, when we were testing, we got our hands on one of the new Bell Moto 10s, I think, like a super early prototype or something, if I remember right. And that was one of the ones we tested fitment on, and we had Alpine Stars and Shoei, and even an Aero. And I mean, we had tons and tons of helmets there. And again, it you could be locked in and be like, man, this fit, this goggle with this foam thickness and this frame material density and this strap tension worked incredible for me, actually, across all six of these helmets or whatever. Whereas maybe an older goggle only worked on two or three of them, but man, we nailed it here. And you have somebody else come in and put on one of those helmets with that goggle and go, ah, this pinches my nose. And you're like, oh, well, okay, it's all out the window now. So I don't have any real silver bullets that are going to solve and fix, give a advice for anybody, but really, again, man, it just comes down to trial and error and see what works for you.
Yeah, pay attention, and if it feels weird, try to do something about it. I mean, that's probably like the best advice we can give, right? Well, hey, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing some information. I love what you're doing. Again, you're one of my favorite guests on the PubMec show.
Awesome.
I find
appreciate
that not just that you have great information, but the way that you share it, you're kind of a different personality than some of the heavy hitters, and I enjoy that. So thank you for taking some time to chat with us and share your knowledge on goggles, and keep
no
kicking
worries,
ass at Stasic.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Hell yeah, dude. Take it easy.
All right, man.
It's crazy to me that a company like 100% gathered as many helmets as they could, as many employees as they could. They got them in a conference room and they just tried them all on. It seems like there could be or should be a better process, but even as I start to think through this, it's much more about customer service and goggle fitment and the way that you educate your consumers more so than it is the way that you possibly test out what can or cannot fit on your soon-to-be users. I think it's very interesting. What did you guys think? Again, that is probably the part that shocked me the most. Of course, learning the fact that when they break down these goggles with the different durometers, the new plastics, the different latches, quick release, magnets, lenses, quick release, all of these different things, how it does make the goggles stiffer, and they try to make up for that with the different durometers, but then also with foam, and for it to try to, you know, match to your face in the helmet that you have. It seems like we're at a weird spot right now where the most expensive goggle does not mean that you're going to get the best goggle for you. So again, please check out the YouTube video where I dive into this topic a little bit more. It is on the Seat Time YouTube channel, so just youtube.com/seattime. We want to make sure that you guys are communicating there with the community and viewers with what helmet goggle combo works for you. Somebody might be in the same position I was in, and they're looking for some help trying to figure that kind of stuff out. If you want to support SeatTime, please head to shop.seattime.co. Make sure you check out the Utility Can Caddy. It is our first ground up product. I'm super proud of it. There's going to be a ton of marketing that I'm going to be trying to do, and behind that for 2024, taking it to all of the blackjack races and the TSEC races that I attend. So please, if you're going to be there, make sure you look for me. Come check it out. If you're not, go to shop.seattime.co or search for Utility Can Caddy. You will find it there. I want you guys to learn more. I hope you have a great 2024. I want to hear your thoughts on the concept between this video and this podcast interview. And just be awesome. Enjoy getting seat time. Stay stoked on two wheels. And eventually, we will see you again. Peace.